scores, and updates from the Duneland, Greater South Shore, Great Lakes, and Northwest Crossroads Conferences. It's game night tonight at 6 here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org.
You're listening to 89.1 FM, Lakeshore Public Radio. Listener-supported public radio in Northwest Indiana. WLPR FM Lowell.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Lounges. Thank you for supporting Lakeshore Public Radio on the dial at 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Midwest Beat is all about music and the people who make it. Today, I've got two great guests. My first hour of the show finds British glam rock legend Noddy Holder of the pioneering UK glam rock band Slade joining me in a transatlantic live interview to talk about the band's long career, his own journey through music, and the soon-to-be-released Slade Anthology Collection, full of all the great songs they made. We'll hear some of those songs as well. For the second hour, from 2 to 3 p.m., my guest will be Jeremy Edge of the Jeremy Edge Project, a brand new album coming from this great young talent, and we'll be playing songs as well. Stay with us. After your headlines, it's all happening. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for supporting Lakeshore Public Radio at 89.1 FM on the dial and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. And I understand we've been getting some great pledges, and I do appreciate that because the more you pledge to keep us going, the more great music and interviews you'll hear from me, Tom Lounges, right here on Midwest Beat on Lakeshore Public Radio. All right, today, as I mentioned earlier, it's another 2 hours of solid music. Coming up on the second hour of the show, I want to make sure you stick around because we've got a great young artist, Jeremy Edge, the namesake and bandleader of the Jeremy Edge Project. He's got a new album that's coming out, his debut album. It's creating quite a buzz, and we'll have him on the show calling in. He's a Pennsylvania native. There's a strong buzz about his blues rock music, and we'll have him on, and you'll get the first sampling on NPR of his music, Jeremy Edge Project, coming up in just about an hour or so. But next, we're going to have a true certifiable rock and roll legend whose career starts back in the 1960s. I'm talking about British glam rock legend Noddy Holder. He's the leader, singer, songwriter, rhythm guitarist of the UK glam rock band Slade. And he'll be joining me in a transatlantic live interview in just a few minutes. We'll talk about the band's long career, his own journey through music, what he's doing now, and the soon-to-be-released Slade Anthology Collection, which will be available on both CD and vinyl formats. The collection's called Come On, Feel the Hits. Yeah, you know that song. Well, we'll be playing plenty of classic Slade songs throughout the course of this hour, including Mama, We're All Crazy Now, My Oh My, and my personal Slade favorite. I'll tell you what it is during the interview. But first, let's start off with a song that kind of reintroduced Slade to America back around 1983. This was covered by Quiet Riot, but this is the real deal. This is Slade, Can You Feel the Noise on Lakeshore.
Baby, baby, baby!
No one.
Are you feeling it, people? Are you feeling the noise? I know I am here in the studios of Lakeshore Public Radio. Thank you for supporting NPR, and thank you for joining me on Midwest Beat today. I'm very excited. It has been at least 15, 16 years since I've had this gentleman on a radio program with me. I'm a big, big fan of the band we're going to rediscover together, a band called Slade. Noddy Holder, the founding member, rhythm guitarist, lead singer, and primarily co-writing genius of all their hits. He is calling us long distance today from the UK. And Noddy, are you with us?
I am. How are you, Tom?
I'm doing wonderful. It has been many years since you and I talked. In fact, I think it was 1987 or 8.
You don't sound that old.
Neither do you. At that point, you guys were on your second coming, I guess you'd say, of America. You had already done, you had just released a couple years earlier, Let Go of My Power Supply, and Runaway was a big hit here in the States, or in the colonies, if you will. And you were doing very well. And then Slade again disappeared, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. But first, I want to find out something that I've been curious about, and that is, why now? Why is this the great time to release such a comprehensive collection of Slade music as Come On, Feel the Hits, which covers you from 70 to 91, your entire career? Why now?
Well, I think the record company, it was their idea. We hadn't had a compilation out of singles for probably over 15 years. And they thought it was time for a definitive collection with all the singles, as you said, from 1970 right through to the early 90s when I left the band. And on there's several versions there, a double CD version with 43 tracks on it. There's a double vinyl version out, and there's a special single CD version out, especially for the US as well. And really, we wanted to give a cross-section of our career of the styles of music we played over that period of time. We were together with exactly the same lineup for 25 years. But it was the record company's idea, really. They thought it was time we had a definitive collection released. And we wanted to hit, hopefully, a new generation of fans, hopefully a new generation of music people that would discover us maybe for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you certainly had that happen in the 80s when Quiet Riot covered Come On, Feel the Noise and Mama, We're All Crazy Now, and it kick-started a Slade revival, and I think you were bigger in the U.S. then than you ever had been, and you'd been consistent here. You just never crossed over to that Led Zeppelin league yet.
That's absolutely right. When we first came over in the 70s, we had great success on live gigs and on a lot of FM radio play, but we couldn't cross over onto AM radio at all. Our music stood out really like a sore thumb amongst the stuff that was getting played on AM at that time, which was the Eagles, Cat Stevens, Carly Simon, James Taylor material. our music then didn't fit the format. But as you say, in the 80s, Quiet Riot covered Come On, Feel the Noise, and their debut album, Quiet Riot's debut album, which Come On, Feel the Noise was the forerunner that helped sell it, it was the biggest selling debut album by any band or any artist ever. And I think that still stands. That album sold 10 million copies on the strength of Come On, Feel the Noise. And, of course, it made myself and the bass player in Slade, the other writer, made us quite a nice little bit of money. So my bank manager in UK was very happy when Quiet Riot did that record. Even today, he gives me a glass of whiskey when I go and see him. So it was very nice for us. And it also, of course, opened the door for Slade as well. We had a new record company deal over there in the early 80s. And on the back of that, Run Runaway became a big success through, in a way, MTV. We hadn't had MTV in the early 70s when we came over at first.
Right.
But then everybody in the US loved the video for Run Runaway, and it helped it go into the charts.
Now, obviously, you were very happy with the financial end of Quiet Riot's covering it. What was your thought on their take on that song? And also, Mama, We're All Crazy Now. In my opinion, they didn't really change it too much. They pretty much copied you guys and just put maybe a little harder edge on it.
Yeah, it was pretty much the same versions on those two songs, yeah. But I think we found that with a lot of the newer bands that came out in the 80s in America. A lot of the bands had seen us play live in the 70s, heard our music in the 70s, and a lot of them told us when we came over, bands like Kiss and Van Halen and those Ilka bands, they were all telling us they saw us when they were young and heard our music when they were young, and it was seeing us or hearing us that spurned them on to form their own bands and become successful in their own right. So it was a great compliment for us, really. The bands like that have been listening to us, and we'd influenced the music, Quiet Riot in particular, because of covering our tracks. But we found that with a lot of the American bands, the sort of, for want of a better word, the glam metal era that took over in the States in the early 80s, we'd been doing that stuff 10 years before, mm-hmm. and hadn't really been able to consolidate all across the U.S., all across.
Now, the U.K. scene was way advanced and pioneered the glam rock era, for lack of a better term, glitter rock, whatever you call it. You had T-Rex, you had David Bowie, you had Slade, you had Sweet. You were among the pioneers of that. And where did that come from? Where did that genre emerge from? Because so many of the British bands that we talk to and we know, from the British Invasion era on up to Black Sabbath and some of the others, Jethro Tull, they all started out doing blues. Did you guys do the same? Were you a blues band to start?
Not really. No, we weren't really a blues band. We were sort of a rocky band right from the off. We did our own versions of, before we became writers, we were doing our own versions of R&B music a lot of the time, sort of rock versions of R&B. The sort of image of what we became sort of came out of the time, certainly in the early, we'd always been a colourful band when we started out in 1966, but when we started writing our own material and found our own unique sound, as it were, at the start of the 70s in the UK, the economic situation and the country was in a very depression sort of era economically, and there was a lot of strikes and things going on at the time. And I think the glam rock sort of campaign that came along sort of cheered people up. It gave them a fantasy land out of their everyday lives, mm-hmm. and that's why it became so successful. People turned to showbiz in those sort of times and they wanted to, you know, have a release from their everyday lives. And I think glam rock provided that. It was a very colourful showbiz sort of movement, especially over here in the UK. And it became very, very successful over here in the UK and became so for about 4 to 5 years, actually. But it put a certainly with a band like ourselves, with Slade, we put a smile on people's faces, both at the live shows and not when we appeared on TV. People were aghast at some of the outfits we used to wear. But we knew the next day in the pubs and clubs and at work, people would be talking about us, whether they liked the music or not. They'd be talking about us, and that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to have an impact. We wanted to have shock tactics visually as well as the music.
Now, before you adopted the wild clothing and the glam feel, you guys were doing rock, as you said, but you also had a different name. You were Ambrose Slade, and you also did a skinhead thing for a while. When did you morph or evolve?
We did, because that was the sort of image, just an image thing. It wasn't a political thing in Britain at that time. It was purely image. We were playing clubs and ballrooms in Britain where the kids of that age, that was the way they were dressing in that sort of skinhead sort of outfit. It was a carry-on from the mod era where, you know, bands like the Small Faces and the Who and that sort of bands were around for the mod era. The skinhead era was sort of a carry-on from that.
Okay.
And we were the only band doing it in the 60s. We were the only band around doing it. And then we our style and that developed from that, our foot stamping, hand clapping, anthemic songs and came out of that era. So that's really, you know, we progressed through that period, but we were the only ones doing it at the time. It was a fun thing. It was a get up and dance, get up out your seat and move sort of movement.
Kind of a precursor to the punk scene?
Yeah, in a way, okay. Yes, very much, yeah.
All right. Now, that didn't last too long, and again, you've evolved into Slade in, what, 70, 71? 69,
yeah, yeah.
71,
yeah.
Somewhere around there?
Yep.
This
we sort of changed our name around 69, in the skinhead era.
Okay.
But we didn't really have any hits at that point till 71.
All right. What prompted you to work with Chaz Chandler? Of course, he had just come off working with Hendrix some years earlier. Hendrix was gone by then, and he took on management and production for you. How did that relationship start, and what did Chaz bring to the mix that evolved into what you became known for?
Well, he'd seen us play live, and he'd heard some tracks we'd recorded in the studio in London. He wanted to see us live, and he came to see us live. And he'd been looking, after Hendrix, he'd been looking for a four-piece band that were an exciting, happy-go-lucky live act. And he saw us play, and he wanted to sign us the next day. And he said, I think I can capture what you're doing on stage. We have to capture that on record. And we had a couple of releases out previously, you know, that didn't take off on radio play. But then suddenly we found our niche in the studio through Chaz. Chaz helped us find our sound that was pretty near the sort of thing we'd been creating on stage. And our first big hit in Europe was a song called Get Down and Get With It, which was originally the version that we heard was by Little Richard, but it was originally by a guy called Bobby Marchant. But we heard the Little Richard version. We did our version because we'd been doing it on stage for maybe 5 years, and we always finished the show with it. And it became our breakthrough record in Europe. It got in the charts, but then that gave us our original sound. We did find our sound then. But Chaz said, Chaz's main contribution in a way was he got us into writing our own songs. He pushed us into writing our own songs. So it went from there, really.
Okay. That said, you and Jim, the bass player, Jim Lea, co-wrote most of the Slade material, at least all the songs we know you for. You had the closest relationship in regards to the band members, it seemed, as an outsider looking in. What was it that made the two of you so prolific and so good together as a team writing?
Well, Chaz put us together. We'd been writing separately within the band before that. But it was Chaz, really. He said, it's not working, the combinations and how you're writing. I want myself, he said, not Ian Jim, I want you two to go away and start writing and see what you come up with. And we did. The first song we really wrote together became our first hit, self-written hit, which was a song called 'Cause I Love You. And we wrote it in maybe 20 minutes.
Hmm.
And we didn't think it was going to be a hit at the time. But Chas said, he spotted right away, he said, this is what I want from you. This is the sort of thing. And we recorded it and we bought it out. And it went to number one in Britain in 2 weeks and was a huge seller all over Europe. And so that gave us confidence then that we could write and we could write hit records. And we just kept churning them out there. We'd found our niche, really.
Mm-hmm.
But it was Chas that pushed us into it. We probably wouldn't have written together all of the time until he said, go on, you know, I know this is how it'll work. So it was down to Chas, really.
What was the process between you and Jim? Were one of you primarily lyrics, the other music, or did you share both equally?
Well, it varied. I mean, Jim was primarily the melody man.
Okay.
And I was primarily the lyrics man, but it chopped and changed all through our career. You know, sometimes Jim would write the majority of the songs, sometimes I'd write whole songs to myself, and then I'd take them to Jim, and we'd rearrange them a bit. So there was all sorts of combinations, but generally, Jim was the melody man, and I was the lyric man. That was on a lot of the stuff, because me being the singer, I knew what fitted my voice. You see, mm-hmm. That's why I think Chas put us together as well, is because when the others were writing songs for me, they didn't understand, because none of them were singers.
Right.
They didn't really understand what needed to be done for the vocalist. But with me being the singer, I understood what I could sing and what I was good at singing. And so that helped a lot once we got that combination.
All right. You are listening to Lakeshore Public Radio, Midwest Beat. I'm Tom Lounges. My guest is Noddy Holder, founding member, lead singer, rhythm guitarist, songwriter of Slade. And the band's got a brand new album, collection, I should say, an anthology coming out 1 week from today on the 25th of September. And it's available as vinyl, as CD. It's got all the hits. And we're going to get to another hit in just a moment. But first, I have one more question for you here, and then we're going to play a song and we'll come back. The 1974. There was talk of a film. David Bowie had just come off of the Ziggy Stardust film, and Slade, of course, one of the pioneers and foremost glam rock artists. There was talk of doing a film with you, but I don't think it ever materialized. Was that, in fact, a project?
Oh, yes, we had a film out.
It did come out.
A film.
Okay.
It was a fictional film. It wasn't a biographical film. It was a fictional film. The story was written by a guy called Andrew Birkin, and it was of a fictional band called Flame, and we were the characters in the band Flame, and it was basically, the story was what goes on behind the scenes in a rock and roll band from when they form through a big successful career and to the eventual demise of a band. And it wasn't really what the fans or the public expected from us. It was a bit of the dark side of the rock and roll business, of show business. And it became quite a success for us in Europe. And we adapted the personas of the members of the band Flame. We had an album out called Slade in Flame. The movie was called Slade in Flame. We wrote a whole set of songs that depicted that band also, which was some of our most successful songs. Some of our biggest hits came from that movie. And then when it came out, people were a bit shocked that we'd made that sort of movie, because they expected us to make a sort of comedy, run-around, speeded-up movie, comedy spot type of movie. This movie wasn't like that at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was a serious movie. And now, all these years on, all these years later, 45 years later, the music critics in Europe and particularly one music critic in particular, a guy called Mark Kermode, who is regarded as the biggest film and music critic in the country, particularly film. He calls Slade in Flame the best rock movie that was ever made, and he calls it the Citizen Kane of rock movies. And it's much more appreciated and regarded now because, in retrospect, it shows how what a band went through in that era and still does today in a lot of cases. You know, it's what goes on, probably the seedier side of the rock and roll business, you know, the business side of things. But it did shock people at the time, but we did get out of that some of our biggest songs and some of our longest lasting and very, very, very successful songs came out of that movie. Slade in Flame, it was called.
Is that available still? Will it be reissued? I know
it's on DVD.
Okay.
It is on DVD.
I had
certainly
heard
in
about
Europe,
it.
Anyway, I don't know whether it's on DVD in the US.
Yeah.
But it's certainly on DVD in Europe, yeah.
We'll have to look into that. I had heard about it, but I didn't think it was ever completed. That's why I was asking that. I'm glad to hear it was.
Oh, yeah, it was. It was on general release all around the all around Europe at the time, yeah. He did get released in the US for a very short time. He got it got released in the US in about, I think it was 1975, only on a very small number of cinemas.
One of my favorite songs, I have two that are personal favorites out of all the wonderful songs you've done. I love most of them. My two favorites are Goodbye to Jane, which I'm going to get to at the end of the hour here, and then Far, Far Away, which was the same era as this film. Was it on the soundtrack? Was it part of that?
It was. Far, Far Away was one of the songs that was written for the movie.
Okay.
And it was in the movie, Far, Far Away. Yeah, it was one of the big songs from the movie. The two biggest hits from that album and from the movie was Far, Far Away, and the other one was a song called How Does It Feel, which is the theme tune to the movie.
Wow. Well, I love that song. I hope you don't mind if I play it, Far, Far Away.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
All right, we're going to play that now. Again, going back 1974 from the film soundtrack that I didn't know existed. This is Slade. We'll be back with Naughty Holder after this.
I've seen the yellow lights go down the Mississippi. I've seen the bridges of the world and they're for real. I've had a red light off the wrist without me even getting kissed. It still seems so unreal. I've seen the morning in the mountains of Alaska. I've seen the sunset in the east and in the west. I've sang the glory that was Rome and passed the hound dog singers home. It still seems for the best. And I'm far, far away, with my head up in the clouds. And I'm far, far away, with my feet down in the crowds. Let it loose around the world, but the call of home is loud, still as loud. Seen the Paris lights from high up on Montmartre, and felt the silence hang below in no man's land. And all those Spanish nights were fine. It wasn't only from the wine. It still seems all in hand. And I'm far, far away, with my head up in the clouds. And I'm far, far away, with my feet the Grand Bahama Island stories carry on. And all those anecdotal smiles stay in your memory for a while. There still seems more to come. And I'm far, far away.
Far Away, Slade, 1974, and Natty Holder, lead singer, the voice behind that song, the songwriter, is far, far away, calling us through the miracle of technology from the UK, and we are here talking about the history of Slade, about their brand new compilation that's coming out next week, the 25th, Come On, Feel the Hits, 1970 to 1991. Those guys had a lot of hits. Natty was behind all of those. This is the career in which he was the singer and founder, 25 years of fronting and running Slade along with his bandmates. One of the things about Slade that was unique, Natty, and I would like to hear why, and that is the spellings. You guys spelled all your song titles, or most of your song titles, differently.
We did, yes. That came about with, as I was talking about before, the first song that we wrote that was a hit, the first hit that we wrote ourselves on, 'Cause I Love You. And we wrote that song, and then we, when we saw it spelled out on the label, Because I Love You, we didn't think it was very rock and very rock and roll. And so we said to Chas Chandler, our manager and producer, we don't like how that's spelt. And I'd written the lyrics on a piece of paper in the studio. I'd written it out in our dialect, the way we speak in the middle of England, the industrial area of England. And it was our dialect, and it's how people write on the bathroom walls in our dialect. And he'd written out in that sort of spelling. And Chas said, well, why don't you spell it like you've written it in the dialect? And so we did. And it became a sort of gimmick for us. People thought it was a great idea, mm-hmm. and then we used it for the next few singles. We used that sort of different sort of spelling, and everybody was waiting to see how we spelt the next title. It was pretty good, really.
It definitely stands out. It makes you guys very unique. The scene in Europe was different than it was in the U.S. here, and we did have some success in the 70s with the glam rock imports or exports, if you will, with Mark Bolan and T-Rex and David. And, of course, that inspired the New York Dolls and Iggy Pop and some of the other bands uh-huh. that came up here, in, uh-huh. especially on the East Coast. What was
Iggy,
it like?
Iggy Pop toured with us quite a lot in the 70s in the U.S.
Okay.
He did a lot of dates with us, Iggy, yeah.
So what was it that you think kept that sound, that image, that style of music from really catching fire here at that time? Were you just too advanced?
What stopped it, did you say?
Well, yeah, what stopped it from catching fire in a huge way? I mean,
I don't know. I was never able to put my finger on it, why it didn't translate into the American charts, really. I don't really know, because it was everywhere else in the world, particularly our records and T-Rex records, and Bowie to some extent, you know, we were getting massive hits all over the world. And then in America, it didn't sort of translate the same. I don't really know why. Maybe it was the image. Maybe it was the look of the bands, the glam rock bands. Maybe the Americans didn't like that sort of look. I couldn't really put my finger on it. It was impossible to tell, because it had worked everywhere else in the world. So mm-hmm. it was hard for us to tell, really. But I mean, we were just going on and doing our thing. We were happy with our image. We were happy with the records we were making. We didn't really understand why America didn't get us, you know, and the other bands like T-Rex. We didn't understand why it didn't happen to the same extent. It was weird, really, and especially now, and from the 80s and then even going on to now, when so many bands look back and say they love that sort of stuff. I mean, even in the case of David Bowie, he broke through more so in the States in the Thin White Duke period with Fame and that sort of music, more so than he did with his early glam rock stuff.
True, true. One of the artists that I've interviewed many times that has often referenced you is Alice Cooper, and you can see the lineage when you look at his show, the early show especially, and when he was doing the glitter and the glam, and then you look at the stuff you guys were doing, you can see a direct line between
Absolutely.
Those two bands.
Absolutely. I knew Alice really well, and he was, obviously in the US, he was one of the pioneers of that colourful big rock show Alice was one of the pioneers of that, and he could relate to the British acts as well. You know, Alice has told me himself that he related to all the British acts, going back as far as the Beatles. I mean, he was a fan of British acts and British music, British bands, and you could see it in the way he presented his shows. And he was obviously the forerunner in America for all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Come On, Feel the Hits is coming out in a week. It's available on vinyl, LP, and CD in a variety of incarnations, different packaging. 1970, 1971, they had a string of nonstop hits, 43 singles in all on some of this collection. Nadi Holder is the songwriter, rhythm guitarist, singer of Slade. Nadi, this new collection, how involved were you and the other guys, in fact, in handpicking or writing notes or being part of the anthology packaging?
Not really. We left it up to, you see, when you have four members in a band, I mean, the band is pretty defunct now. I left the band in the early 90s. A couple of the guys still carry on under a Mark II version. But the thing is, you get four guys in the band and you all have a different idea of what should go on an album. But mm-hmm. with this particular album, we left it to the record company really to choose. For each territory of what they thought should go on the album. And on the double CD version, there is pretty much every single we ever released from a successful single point of view. There are 43 tracks on the double CD version.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, there wasn't very much left off there. They were all tracks that have been successful somewhere in the world. So it really is the definitive collection. But we left it more or less to the record company to choose the ones, because we felt, you know, pretty much they're all songs that we all four of us would have wanted on there anyway. So, you know, it wasn't really a difficult choice to make.
How enjoyable is it for you to be doing things like this, like talking about the old days with radio and promoting this box set at this point in your life when you've moved on? To go back and revisit, is this a pleasant experience for you?
It is.
Okay.
Yes, it's pleasant. It is. It's great because I like to think that we've found our little piece in rock history. And I'm proud of our songs. I'm proud of the band. I'm proud of the catalogue of music that we produced. You know, and so I don't find it difficult blowing the trumpet for the band, as it were. You know, I enjoy doing it, and I think I'm quite willing to, you know, try and move the music on to a new generation of people, and hopefully a new generation of people will discover Slade's music and what Slade were all about. So I'm very proud of it. I don't find it a chore or anything like that. I do enjoy doing it. And I'm used to doing it. I mean, I was in rock and roll bands. My first band I was in was in 1960. So I've been doing it a very, very long time. I've been working in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And after I left the band, I went on to do a lot of different things. I had my own radio show in UK for 20 years. I've done acting. I was in a big TV show in Britain for 5 years. A comedy series, drama series, and I've done over 100 voiceover adverts and appeared in adverts. I've written 2 books. I've voiceover documentaries now quite a bit. So I've had quite a varied career, and I still enjoy doing it. I do enjoy doing it.
Working with
different people as well.
What is your current project you might be working on now besides promoting this box set? Do you have anything in the works?
Nothing at present. No, nothing really at present. I just take things as they come along. When people offer me, ask me to do things. I just completed a 20-part series for Sky Television for the UK, which has been shown quite a bit here. And it's 21-hour programmes that I voice them and present them for different genres of music. So it's 20 different genres of music and showing the history of each genre of music. So that was the real That was the last real sort of big thing I did, yeah.
Okay. I know you mentioned a couple of the guys that have carried on with Mach 2 of Slade. Given if this is a success like in the 80s and it all comes back, would you guys do a one-off tour to kind of celebrate this and mark an anniversary?
I wouldn't think we would now. We're all in our 70s now, and I think it would be very difficult for all the years that we haven't played together to get back together and capture the old magic that we used to have. And we all live in different parts of the country. The drummer actually lives over in Denmark, so we don't really communicate that much. We've sort of moved apart from one another. I speak to him on the phone occasionally and stuff like that. But I think it'd be very difficult for all the years we haven't played together to suddenly get back together and try and recreate the magic that we had in the old days. I think it would be very hard to do. So I doubt very much we would reform and do a final tour. I can't see it.
Okay.
I think we're, you know, at our age now. I don't think we would be doing that.
One of the things about Slade that was unique, and that was the live show. You guys were so strong as a live act. And in fact, I think Slade Live is your best-selling album, if I'm not wrong.
It's certainly one of the biggest albums, yeah, absolutely. The show was an exciting show. It was a loud show. It was a vibrant show. Very exciting. And a big audience participation type show as well.
Two things that I want to ask, and then I know you got to go, and that is a couple, you know, there's all these myths and stories when you talk about the early days of rock and roll, and so many are based in truth, so many are just made up. And there's two that I want to ask you about. One, of course, we all heard Lemmy Kilmister was Jimi Hendrix's guitar tech and roadie for years before Motorhead formed. You, I heard, were Robert Plant's driver during Robert's early years, right before he joined Zeppelin, and he kind of mentored you. Is that true, or is that just one of those fantasies?
Well, he didn't mentor me, no, but...
Okay. Set the record straight.
We were in bands in the same hometown. We were from the same area. And when my band wasn't working, Robert's band, he had a band at that time called Listen. And one of those guys was at school with me. And they'd never had a van to transport their equipment or anything. So when my band wasn't working, I'd drive my dad's van, and I'd take their equipment and the band to their gigs and set the equipment up for them. So I've known Robert very, very since his very first band days, you know, when we were all doing the same circuit together and we were all coming up together. And I remember Robert coming. He used to come and see my band play at the time. And he came one Sunday night, and this was like late 60s. I'd known him since about 65 at this point. And he came up to see one of our gigs in this little club in the Midlands. And he said, I've had an offer to join with Jimmy Page in a band called the New Yardbirds. The Yardbirds have got it down, the New Yardbirds, because new lineup. He says, I'm wondering whether to do it. Shall I do it? And I said to him, yeah, of course, Robert, you know, you'll have a chance of going to America. You've always wanted to go to America, as we all wanted to as musicians from England. We all wanted to go and have the chance to play in America. And I said, you know, you should go, because you'll have a chance of playing in the States, and you'll see the place of the birth of the blues and the birth of the music that we all love. And you should go. And so, he obviously took that, he took his chance, and he joined up with Jimmy Page, and John Bonham, we also knew, of course, because he was from our same hotel, our hometown. So we knew John, who played together in bands with John Bonham as well, you know, on the same bills as Robert, myself, John. We'd played in different bands on the same bills together. So we were all from the same circuit. So okay. It was great when we saw the success that he had, him and John had. We obviously, with Led Zeppelin, took off very quickly in America.
Right. Well, so there is a little grain of truth
so
in the fact.
I did drive him about, yeah.
Okay. One other of those stories that I'd like to have you set straight, and that is, of course, we've all heard that before Robert was joining the New Yardbirds, that they had talked to Terry Reid, another amazing singer from England. Listeners, if you've never discovered Terry Reid, that's R-E-I-D, please look him up and listen to his music.
Well, but Terry Reid was offered the gig in Zeppelin, and he gave Jimmy Robert's name to go and
okay.
sing. And Jimmy and Peter Grant, Jimmy Page and Peter Grant, the Zeppelin manager, they came up to our hometown at a gig. It was a college in our hometown of Walsall in the West Midlands. And Jimmy and Peter Grant came up to see Robert's band at that time. It wasn't Listen, it was another band he had at that time, on Terry Reid's recommendation.
Hmm. Okay, I didn't know that.
Zeppelin...
So...
Jimmy offered Terry Reid the gig in his band in the New Yardbirds originally, and Terry said, "No, I'm happy doing what I'm doing, but there's this guy, Robert Plant, up in Birmingham, and they came to see him." That was the story of Terry Reid.
Okay.
That gave him the idea.
The tie-in that I'm trying to get to with that is, I understand you were actually asked to replace Bon Scott in AC/DC, but turned it down because you were working still with Slade, and of course you went on to have more hits in the 80s with them. So what was the story on that? Were you surprised to be asked? And was that the fact that you turned it down because Slade was still working?
Well, Slade was still working. I mean, the guys out of AC/DC, apparently they knew of me. Of course, we'd seen one another play several times, and they came to a gig when Bon had died. They came to a gig when they were looking for a new vocalist, and they didn't really get to me. I think they were headed off at the pass by my management, who were there, and they were going to offer me the gig in the band. But as you say, I was still playing with Slade at the time. I was quite happy to stay. Slade was my band, you know. I'd been with them a long time. I wasn't just going to walk out on Slade, you know, on Slade at that time. But of course, Brian was the perfect vocalist for them anyway.
Right.
I knew Brian, his band Geordie, who had worked with Slade, you know, that we'd worked together, and we knew Brian. And Brian was, for AC/DC, was the perfect choice of vocalist for him, you know. But musicians all interchange, you know, all the time. We all know one another. Our paths always cross. But you are correct. Apparently it was on the cards that I was going to be offered the gig in AC/DC, but... you know, I was quite happy staying with Slade at the time, you know.
Right.
So I have no regrets about it at all. Brian was a great choice and probably the best choice.
It's funny,
you know,
for
the style of band.
Everybody has had successful careers, and sometimes you got to scratch your head and say, I wonder what if, you know, if Terry had taken Led Zeppelin, if you had taken ACC, how the paths would have changed.
I never think what if. I never look back and think of those things. I never think of what if. I'm a great believer in life takes you on the path that it determines. I'm a great believer in fate, and things happen for a reason. You do things for a reason. You meet up with the guys that you end up in a band with for a reason. You know, with the case of Slade, it was 25 years together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reason I left that band was we'd run our course. I just felt I'd got stale in the band. We'd had 25 years, the same four guys in the band. It was a long time, 25 years together, working 24/7 together, and you get stale. You end up doing album tour, and I was looking for other challenges. So in the end, I gave them 2 years' notice before I was going to leave the band. I gave them a chance to decide what they wanted to do, they all wanted to do. And when I eventually left in 91, 92, I knew there were openings going to be there for me, that I wanted to take new challenges and work with new people, which is what happened.
Jim left at the same time. I think he probably felt that if you were gone, it wasn't the same band, is what I would think. Have you worked with him?
He wasn't going to leave.
Okay.
From what at the time, he was going to stay, and they were going to get another vocalist in, I surmise. And I was very surprised when Jim left pretty much straight after he left as well. But it was very unexpected. I didn't expect him to leave also.
Did you ever work with him on projects again outside of Slade?
Afterwards, no. Okay. He wanted to do his own. He always wanted to do his own solo stuff anyway. He'd always had the thing that he wanted to work on his own and do everything for himself. He'd always had that, you know, he'd always had that in the back of his mind that he right. wanted to work on stuff on his own, yeah.
Well, Nadia, it's been a pleasure talking to you again. I thank you for giving us so much time. Is there anything we haven't touched on that you would like to let listeners know?
I think we've touched on a lot of stuff. It's been great. Thank you very much.
Thank you for all the years of music and for letting this collection come out at last. We get to relive the glory days.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me anyway.
How do fans
keep on rocking?
How do fans keep up with you? Is there a website?
Not me personally, but I'm sure Slade have got several forums. The Slade fan clubs have got several forums.
All right. Coming up in the second hour, we've got another young artist is coming up the chain, and that is Jeremy Edge Project. But before we go, I'm going to play a couple more Slade songs for the listeners. I definitely want to play my favorite again, Goodbye to Jane. And then should we do Run Runaway? What do you think? Should we show them what the band sounded like on the second round?
Yeah, cool. That's a goodie.
All right. We're going to do that now. Naughty, thank you for your time, and I bid you good health and good life.
Same to you. Stay safe. Bye.
All righty. Bye-bye. As we say goodbye to Naughty, we'll queue up Run Runaway in a minute, but let's first say goodbye to Jane. This is one of my favorites. I told you in the beginning of the show that I would play my favorite song, and it's a toss-up sometimes between My Oh My, Goodbye to Jane, and Far, Far Away. Well, this is the one that I like probably the most today. Goodbye to Jane. Stay with us for more Slade, and still ahead, the Jeremy Edge Project.
I say you're so young.
right. All right. She's so young. She is Jane. Goodbye to Jane. And again, customly spelled goodbye to Jane. T apostrophe Jane. Goodbye is G-U-D-B-U-Y. I love looking at the spelling of Slade's songs. These guys were so colorful, not only musically, but visually, their shows. One of the great bands of rock and roll that sadly not enough American audiences and American rock fans really got to know or appreciate. So please investigate these guys. Look them up. Listen to some of their tunes. And don't forget they got a new compilation coming out that I'm excited about. As a record store guy, I'm very excited and I hope to carry it. Come On, Feel the Hits is coming out next week, the 25th, on both CD and vinyl formats. There is a variety of different ways and means to get this collection in CD form, box form, multiple album and CD compilations, and just look for it. Come On, Feel the Hits, and they have plenty, 43 in all on this collection. Goodbye to Jane. If that sounded familiar to some of you that were of the 80s and 90s era, we were talking about how Quiet Riot covered Come On, Feel the Noise and Mama, We're All Crazy Now. Well, Goodbye to Jane was actually covered by another one of those 80s glam rock bands that came up from the LA scene. Brittany Fox covered Goodbye to Jane and had a minor hit with it. But again, nothing like the originals. It was such a thrill and such an honor for me as a fan of and someone that came of age in the late 60s, early 70s to talk to Noddy Holder. So thank you to Chip at Chipster PR for helping me set this up. And in fact, we got another Chipster client coming up, Mr. Jeremy Edge on the Jeremy Edge Project. Completely different sound. It's more of a rock blues collection. And it comes out, I believe it's already out. I was going to say today, but I think it came out about a week or two ago. We'll find out in just a bit, but I promised to play this one, and we're going to play it as we get ready to welcome Jeremy. This is the 1984 comeback hit from Slade. After Quiet Riot kind of kicked the door down and people started to rediscover Slade as a band, they got signed again, released in America, and went on MTV with this one. After this, we're going to get into Jeremy, but one more Slade song as we run away. Run away on Midwest Beat.
We'll be right back.
1984, Slade gave us that one. That was the big comeback. It broke the top 20 in America. It was top 10 in England, and it started a new run for the boys. And that lasted until 1991 when Naughty left. And Slade is still out there in a different incarnation, but nothing will top the original four guys. And what a voice, Naughty Holder. I'm still pinching myself. One of those pinch me moments, talking to one of your rock and roll heroes. I don't get a lot of those, but this was definitely one of them.